Hi everybody, I thought I'd tune in to say hello and also just to offer a few more reflections. And it's about having it together. Somebody commented to me recently that they were really surprised to learn that I don't actually have everything together because as far as they were concerned, I present that way. This was echoed online through some comments on a post that I made when I was in quite a vulnerable state and that's often the case. And when I really reflected on it, I realised that actually throughout my whole life, this has kind of been said to me many a time. So it's kind of made me think how, again, I think this highlights the autistic experience. So this is another example in my mind of being human, of course, but how the labels of high and low functioning are just not adequate. I'm still seeing so much on my page from some of the old posts that I have on there of people saying that there's nothing wrong with the labels and that, at a, you know, when you go in to see a medical professional, if you can throw, they're low functioning at the medical professional, they'll understand immediately what their needs are and vice versa. And it's just so messy and inaccurate. So we've talked so extensively about this on my page and through this podcast, but it really does baffle me and perplex me how you can explain everything so clearly, or at least I feel it's very clear, and I've heard other people explaining it and I really get it. And other people say, you know, just for speed, low high, because then you know. And somebody again said, you know, if you say, oh, they're low functioning, they know they probably can't speak. But as we know, you don't necessarily, well, no, you absolutely cannot say somebody is low functioning and know what that actually means for that individual. And the same goes for high functioning, which is what I'm going to focus on a little bit here. So my experience of being told I have it all together, I can function quite well in society. I have always been quite academically able. I've appeared quite sociable. It's very important I use the word appeared, because actually when we really reflect on it and deconstruct it deeply, whilst I liked being around other people and children, I didn't socialise very well, actually. Throughout my whole life, particularly when I got to my teen years, socialising was very difficult and it became something much harder and something that posed so many more challenges as I got older. And you would think, actually, that as you got older or as you get older, it would be easier. But I feel that actually, as you become an adult, people expect a certain kind of communication from you or a certain kind of behaviour. And me being the kind of person who doesn't really see hierarchy, not naturally anyway, and still actually struggles with it even when I am aware of it, because being a PDAer, you don't respect it. Quite frankly, I'm not going to speak for all, but that's my experience. Your status socially or in a workplace does not, in my mind, entitle you to any respect. You earn respect. I was the same when I was a teacher. You know, I did not expect those children to respect me as an individual just because I was a teacher. There were things they had to respect about my position in that classroom, but I also felt they had the right to question things. And that's the kind of person I am. And I've shared before about things like at school where, you know, sometimes the teacher would think, oh, who can I use as an easy target to make an example of, to show the rest of the children how to behave? You know, the ones that are really misbehaving. And I was actually a really kind of studious child. But my mum did raise me to stand up for myself. But it also was in there anyway. Like, if I felt there was an injustice, I couldn't help but speak up. And I am the same now. It is one of the worst things. And I know that this is really common in so many autistic people. You know, you just have this really strong sense of justice and injustice. And you're compelled to point it out and address it and challenge it. And that is just the way things are. It has got me into so much trouble and continues to get me into an awful lot of trouble. But it is just, you know, that's in there. And I remember when this one teacher did try and make an example of me and was very shocked when I was not rude, but I stood my ground. And I knew that I had a right to not be humiliated in the way that this teacher was trying to humiliate me. And this teacher actually then had a few more run-ins with me, because then I think they felt that, you know, I'd shown them up. So they had to kind of assert their authority. And sadly, again, it makes me sound really rude. And I wasn't. I was such a polite child. But I just didn't respond to that. And I've said before, I've really struggled with realising I'm a PDAer. And I do have it written in my report, like, you know, that I scored highly on the EDA QA, I think it is. But I've still gone back and forth about whether I can be or I'm not, because I don't present like my children at all. But I know that really innately I am. I have just learned a lot of different strategies and coping mechanisms and masks to kind of hide the control. So I've said before about when I was young, about losing in games, I couldn't tolerate it at all. And I took back control by pretending I was okay with other people winning, because I remember getting told I was a sore loser and all this kind of thing. And I didn't like that feeling. But, you know, nothing actually changed internally. So I just had to learn to pretend I was okay with it. And I will admit, as the years went by, I suppose I didn't really care anymore, but I took control of that, if that makes sense. And I think there's so many examples in my life where that's happened. I've internalized things and I've controlled the situation, you know? And I wonder as well if this even comes down to my exams. I remember my dad saying to me, and again, some of this is repetitive, but I remember my dad saying, you only need a C. Why are you stressing yourself out and putting all this pressure on yourself to get an A? And I said, well, I'm capable of an A. I think there was an element of the fact that I've said before, I was academically able, and I think where I failed on so many other things, like my social side of things, I think for me it was like an easy win to be able to control the academic side of things. So I think it went really far beyond just being capable. I think I was a perfectionist, which is something else I still want to talk about. But definitely, there were elements of my life that I needed control of. And that was one of them, was, you know, how I performed academically and how I presented as a person. And I'm realizing that as much as I'm still not 100% who I am, I'm not really sure how much is a mask and what's authentically me. I can see over the years that, you know, the actual mask I've created for myself is another way to kind of control how I'm seen. And that's a really, really important part of my personality. And a lot of it has been conscious. So some is unconscious, and that's the stuff that confuses me. There are things that have been conscious because I've wanted to be seen a certain way. And now I've been able to drop that stuff really easily. So, for example, the perfectionism side of me, I'm now aware that I don't need to be like that. You know, I know who I am. I know where my challenges are. And I've been able to free myself from kind of the chains I created for myself, really, because I actually genuinely now don't care as much, a little bit still. I don't care as much about people seeing me as perfect or always achieving the highest grade or, you know, and I kind of wish in a way that I could have been this person when I was young, when my dad was telling me you don't need more than a C. I mean, I still think you do what's right for you. But my gosh, yeah, the pressure I did put on myself was insane. And I think so many young people and especially autistic people will understand that and resonate with that. But now I just think, I don't know, I'm just getting more confident and more comfortable in my own skin. And actually, I don't have to get everything right and be the best at everything. And growing up, that was a burden I had and a burden I carried. And that caused so many meltdowns for me. I just didn't know that's what they were at the time. I was overloaded and overwhelmed and trying to live up to my own expectations, which were too high, really. And so although I achieved an awful lot in my life, it came at a cost. And I think that's what people don't understand. And this high-functioning thing, again, going back to the masking element, going back to the control element, and going back to being perceived as having it all together, I worked really hard to give that impression, and to the point that I convinced myself that I had it all together. I wasn't trying to trick people. I did all the things and played all the games and achieved all the things that I felt I needed to show people, you know, look at me, I'm not a failure. I am a success. I am capable. I am intelligent. And like I said, you've had people who have always challenged me or bullied me or tried to put me in my place. I've been called stuck up and arrogant. I've been accused of trying to show people up with the work I've produced and, you know, told that I'm trying to make people look bad for my own acceleration in jobs. And it's just not who I am. Everything comes from inside. Nothing is ever about anybody else. And I think what's been great is now that I don't feel so stressed about having to keep this facade up. And actually, like I said, now I know that actually those challenges are not because there's anything wrong with me, and my social difficulties are not actually because I am a bad person or a horrible person, because I've always known I'm kind and caring. And it always really bothered me how other people couldn't see that. But of course, all they could see was their misconceptions, really, is the way that they perceived my behaviour. Now, I have to accept that's how they came across, perhaps. I still question sometimes, though, what goes on in their minds to have gone there, to think that, oh, she's trying to show us up. I think it's crazy to me because it's not what I would have thought. If I see somebody performing well, I just think, oh, they're conscientious. I've never been threatened by anybody in any of these ways, and I just wouldn't have perceived it that way. So, you know, for me, we get told as autistics that we're kind of thinking wrong and that, you know, everyone else's perceptions are correct. And whilst I do accept that, you know, they may have perceived me that way, I still think it says a lot about how they think. And I still don't think that necessarily means that the way I've behaved is wrong. But I can accept that maybe a little bit more diplomatically, that we're different. And like the double empathy problem suggests, I was never going to 100% get them. They were never going to 100% get me. But it is a shame that they always go to that negative narrative. They always go to that negative opinion about you. And that wasn't something I was ever like. I wrote recently that I was always very positive. I was always seeing the good in people. I remember hearing my mum say that to somebody, and I was so proud that she saw that in me, that she saw me as this good, positive person. And I tried for so many years to continue being that person, but my word, there's only so much you can take, isn't there? And I feel like such a broken version of that person, and it's still in there, but it's not me in my core anymore. Sadly, I'm now much more cautious, and I don't trust people. I'm still naive and I'm still vulnerable, though. And I've also mentioned this before, and it is frustrating that I can keep having the same thing happen to me over and over again at my age, in my late 30s, and I still fall for it time and time again. And because I cannot still read people and still can't 100% understand their motives, I find it safer just to isolate, just to keep away from people, because I am suckered in too easily if they just give me a smile or they say the right things. I mean, I'm getting better, but I think, again, it comes down to that wanting to see the good in people, and someone only has to say a nice thing and I'm, you know, I fall for it. I think I'm just so desperate, maybe from the trauma I had growing up and the bullying, so desperate to be liked and accepted. And I think, that's still a part of me, and I can't pretend it's not. But I am learning that you can't trust everybody, and it's a really sad truth, but that there are good people out there. And I think it's about trying to regain that balance. For a long time, I've actually gone the opposite way, where I have literally seen everybody and everything as really negative. And that shaped my emotions and my worldview. And it made me into quite a depressed person, to be honest with you. And I still go through bouts of depression. So again, people thinking I have it all together, it's so interesting. When I first had my eldest, everybody told me what an amazing mum I was. And do you know what? I actually felt it. I am so devoted to my children, and everybody was like, you have got it nailed with him. You know, you're just such a lovely mum, and he's such a happy child. But when he got a bit older, he started to experience sensory issues, and, you know, we realised he was autistic, and things changed. And the strategies and the things I used when he was very small, they weren't appropriate anymore. And I'm a really big believer in adapting with your child, you know, adapting to your child. Some people expect me to still be the way I was when he was small. It's making it sound like I was really authoritarian. I wasn't. But what I'm trying to say is there are things you can do you know, sometimes as a parent that aren't going to work other times, and you need to be aware when, okay, this isn't working anymore. And I'll give you an example. I did use timeout when he was very small. It seemed effective. On reflection, I can see it was pointless and he wasn't learning anything from it really. But, you know, I'd watch Super Nanny and that was just what you did for kids, right? But as he got older, I started to realise he's not connecting this. This is a complete waste of time, and I stopped bothering. So that's kind of a very small example of what I mean. But when we went to all these appointments and we were assessing him and all that kind of thing, and I was having to raise my concerns, you know, you have the usual parents being under the microscope. I get for safeguarding reasons why they have to do this, but it's obviously really hard. But over the years, you know, by the time that I'd seen so many professionals and the health visitor and, you know, gosh, so many people, they were pretty confident that I was a really good mum and I had it all together. And I used to get told all the time, you're such a confident, good mum. And I was in some ways, but what they didn't see is when they'd gone was the impact that all of this had on me. And for example, the appointments and the being under the microscope, the constantly having to provide evidence and just the stress of life. When you have a child who's not neurotypical, I mean, I think parenting anyway is tough. I say that all the time. But when you have a kid who isn't typical, who isn't developing like their peers, you know, people do kind of throw this tragedy narrative at you, and they're concerned, and there's disorders and, oh dear, developmental delays. And yes, they are things that they need to be monitored, because we need to think about whether there's support that the child needs. Not that that's always available, but that's another story. But my word, this had such an impact on me. And, you know, but again, I had this need to appear a certain way. And I was also aware that if they saw any cracks in my armour, that they might blame me as a parent, or they might not support me. And, you know, I was really aware of that. And I'd seen it happen from when I was teaching as well, where parents always got kind of blamed and dismissed. And, you know, so I had to put on this mask and this really strong exterior. And I was strong, but they didn't realise the impact all of this was having on me. And, you know, how sometimes I would doubt myself. I think that's a natural parenting thing. But generally speaking, people have said, oh, you know, you're quite an insecure person, which is true on some level. I'm insecure about myself with social interactions. I am insecure about my appearance and things like that. But I'm not insecure about my profession. So when I was teaching, I wasn't insecure about that at all. Really confident, genuinely. And I was never insecure about my parenting. And I think this is what used to kind of jar people, is that I'm very self-deprecating in some ways and then really confident in others. And I think people just cannot work me out. And also I found that a lot of people tend to have this need that when you are feeling good about something or you are confident, they have to knock you down. Like, I've heard this expression about extinguishing somebody's flame or something doesn't make yours burn brighter, and it's so true. But I feel like everybody's always tried to put me in my place, and I'm imagining that's going back to people feeling that I feel I'm superior, and I don't. I do not compare myself to other people. I do not do things because of other people. When I achieved in my jobs, I didn't sit there thinking, oh, I'm better than everyone else. I was just really proud that what I'd put in was paying off. And I was just really proud to be able to make a difference in such an important profession to children, because I did make a difference. And that was, you know, one of the most humbling things. And so, no, it was always about the children. It was always about, you know, the correct focus was there. And also it was to challenge myself. So it's a shame, because I have been misunderstood my whole life, and I think so many people will resonate with that. But yeah, so going back to the keeping it all together, for years I had it all together, and people never saw any cracks or chinks. And then one day I'd had this really difficult time trying to get my son to preschool while I had my youngest in a pram, and he tried to run out into a road, and my pram fell. It actually went into the road and leaned, and I had to try and retrieve this with one arm to stop it from falling into the road with my baby in it, and also get my other child who tried to run off. We were at a crossing, so we were in the middle of the crossing. So you have to cross one bit of road, stand on the crossing, and then cross another bit of road. And the bit in the middle was so small. I found it a terrifying experience going that way anyway, but there was no other route out across this road. So I had no choice and I had to do this daily a couple of times and it stressed me out every time I reached it. But yeah, I managed to do it and get my children. I mean, the light went green for the traffic and I was panicking, but I did manage to get them both safely to the other side. But once I got to the other side, I just cried. And my son was looking at me strangely and we walked in silence to his preschool because I literally could not talk. And, you know, I felt awful, but I just was so scared. And, oh, it was a horrible situation to be in. But again, put on the exterior, the strongest way to go, oh, morning, everyone, and try to be all normal. But one of the workers there could see clearly that there was something wrong, like in my face, in my eyes, I'm not really sure. And I'd never really had this kind of level of care or anyone really noticing anything before. And as I tried to leave, they stopped me and put their hand on my shoulder and said, are you okay? And that was it. I just burst into tears. And this is one of the first moments, you know, since realising I'm autistic and since having children, that I'd kind of let that vulnerability out, really. And I cried and we stepped outside and he hugged me. He was just lovely. I felt humiliated, but it also felt really good to kind of let that emotion out and to show a vulnerable side. Nobody thought I was struggling because I was so good at appearing to have it all together. I want to make it clear, though, that it's not because I don't have some things together, because I do. But the autistic experience anyway, regardless, is that sometimes you have it together and sometimes you don't. And you are not always in control of when that's going to be. So, for example, I've given so many examples about certain settings I might go into. If you send me to a doctor's surgery, I am not the same person. I am literally a shadow of myself. I'm a crumbled, broken person in that setting. And despite the fact that I know psychologically all of the reasons why, because of past trauma and medical gaslighting, it doesn't change the fact that when I go in there, I can't handle it and I'm a different person. So to them, they have not seen anybody who's ever had anything together. They just see this like broken, anxious wreck of a person. But then if they see me in the professional capacity when I'm teaching, they would be in utter shock at how capable and confident I can be. But it's not just about settings. It can be about sensory issues. It can just be from day to day or through the course of a day, different things can kind of affect you. So although I can communicate and I can speak really well, as I always share with you, I sometimes have processing difficulties. And so sometimes in these podcasts, I'll cringe because I'll get the absolute wrong word. And I think, oh, I've used the wrong word. How embarrassing. But actually, once upon a time, I would not have posted anything with an error in. And that would be posts on my page or on the podcast. And now I let it go. Because as far as I'm concerned, it's not because I'm happy with mediocre, because I'm not. But this need to be perfect, I realise, is just hurting me. And it is unnecessary to communicate what I need to communicate. And actually, I think teaching helped me with this a bit as well, with children who struggle with spelling and that kind of thing. And I used to say to them, don't worry about, you know, the spelling being accurate. Like, we can work on those things. But what is really important to me is that we are expanding your vocabulary and we are getting your ideas out. Like, really, the intent is because we want you to be able to communicate. I said, I want to be able to see all those wonderful ideas that are in your head. So let's just find a way to get those out. And that, you know, it might be through writing that is phonetically created and the spelling is inaccurate. But again, there's just so much more to life than those things. Those skills can be built on. And I think the more that I was helping children through these areas of, areas where they were not confident. I'm just going to say that because I can't think. Areas of weakness, or it's not the right word. I can't think. I'm moving on. See, again, that would have normally really bothered me. And it is. It's going to loop because I can't think of the word, but I'm going to move on. I started to be a bit kinder to myself because I was like, actually, why are you putting all this emphasis on these things that are just unimportant and pointless? So that's a really important thing for me. But I think this kind of incident of me not holding it together and then actually somebody for once being nice to me, I thought maybe there is something to this. Like, maybe I am too tightly wound. Maybe I am giving this kind of energy of don't come near me, don't talk to me, don't question me. I will admit that's another thing I struggle with, is the being questioned. Like, you know, if it's a legitimate one, that's fine. But one of my biggest things is when people try and tell you things you already know. And I've had to learn to grin and nod, because if I respond with, no, I already know that, you know, don't patronize me or something, or if I get defensive because I don't like what's being said, obviously you don't get met with a very nice attitude and you get told you're rude or arrogant. So I've learned to grin and nod to a lot of things that, you know, actually really agitate me. And again, it makes me sound dreadful, but it's just the truth. And I know so many people understand what I'm saying. But this was definitely the start of me being able to be a bit more vulnerable and a bit more real with people around me. I have been like this with my mum since I was a teenager, and my husband and my sister. I've been very real with them. I went through, I've told you before, I had a lot of issues when I was a teenager with body dysmorphia and bullying and that kind of thing. So, and I was suicidal at one point. And people scoff when you're young and you write these letters and you have these thoughts, but I was. And I didn't really think extensively about what that meant, but I didn't want to be here. That's all I know, is I just didn't want to feel how I felt, and I couldn't see a way out. And when my mum realised what was going on, she was amazing. And, you know, so I have had that outlet to be able to, she taught me how to communicate. Before that, I could not communicate, and it would be meltdowns and it would be turning in on myself and self-harming and that kind of thing. I didn't self-harm where I hurt my skin or anything like that. Although I do skin picking, and I've always done that. And I do that when I'm very stressed. And I've done that since I was very small. But where I used to turn on myself is I think I've said this before, but again, I'll repeat myself. I used to write myself letters. People, if they ever found them, would laugh because they thought I was being a drama queen. I got called drama queen more times than I can even tell you. But people would laugh because they were like, this is so dramatic and like attention seeking. And it just wasn't at all. It is genuinely how I felt. But I would turn on myself. I would write horrible things using swearing language that I never even used at the time. And I'd call myself effing fat, effing ugly, you don't deserve love. I would write all of these things down. And so if you think over the course of the years that I was doing this and hiding it from people, that stuff started to go in. And it was actually because this is how I got made to feel at school. These are the things I was called at school. I was called ugly. I was told nobody loved me and no one will ever love me. And I pretended it didn't bother me in front of them. I didn't want them to know it got in there, but it did get in there. And then I perpetuated it. And then as I got older, I became really self-deprecating. So I would get in there first with an insult about myself, just so that everybody knew I already thought that about myself. And then maybe it was like, again, taking that control back. I don't know if that's related to PDA or something completely different. But I even controlled that. I even controlled how people would insult me, to be honest with you. And it did hurt. But as far as they were concerned, it wasn't. And I've shared this before, speaking to people when I left school, they were like, oh, you were just, you know, nothing bothered you. And they have no clue. I had this one friend at school who said to me, I think you need to show the more sensitive side of yourself. Because I think the reason people target you, because I had a friendship group that were not very nice, a group of boys, if you can imagine. And only one or two of them were actually very nice, to be honest. And I sometimes think, why did I hang out with these people who were horrible to me? But I think, again, I had such low self-esteem and self-worth, and I didn't think I was worthy of friends or love or boyfriends. That's how I'd been made to feel about myself. And so I think I put up with more than I should have. And also just that naivety of not really understanding sometimes what was going on. I didn't realize they weren't really my friends. It's looking back now that I can see things clearly, and I so weep for that person. I really do grieve for that child. It makes me want to cry. Oh my word. Because this is where I get annoyed. You know, people say you've always had it together. I did come across as though I had it together when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, as an adult, as a parent. I do have some things together. There are some things in my life that, you know, yeah. And those things I will share with people, and I will try and help people through things, because we all have lived experience that can help other people. But there are some times when I do not have it together, and it's a mask. Or it's how I want people to view me. I want to control how they see me. And then there are times when I just blatantly don't have it together. And I will admit, since realizing I'm autistic and also having the challenges of having two of my own autistic children, that mask has slipped so much and I am much more openly vulnerable. But you also get attacked for that as well. So you kind of, people aren't nice to you when you've got this front. People can kind of see you're not authentic, or people are annoyed by the fact they think that you are stuck up or arrogant. But then when you show your vulnerable side, people use that as ammunition as well. So for me, I don't actually know how to be. All I know now is I just have to be me and whatever that is. And I'm still trying to work out who that is. But the truth is, there are some areas that I have got a lot of value to give. I've got a lot to offer people, and I try and give my time and I try and give support to people in so many ways. But there are things where I need that connection and I need that support. And I think somebody actually on the page said that. And I'm so sorry, because I can't remember which post it was and who it was to thank you. But you made me feel better, because you said, I think the thing is, we think you have it together, and in a way take my lead from the posts I give. And it made me feel nice on one level, because to think that people do think from my posts, well, she has it together, she's worth listening to, that's flattering. And in the past, the bit about, kind of, you don't have it together. In the past, that would have really bothered me. But actually, do you know what made me feel really happy about that, is that I'm glad, in a way, I'm showing this vulnerability. I'm glad you can see past that mask and that I am now not holding myself up to this unreasonable standard, this unachievable, unrealistic standard. Because none of us can be perfect all the time. None of us can have it together all of the time. And especially us neurodivergent folk, we have so many other challenges and things are so changeable for us on a day-to-day basis. And I'm glad, in a way. I'm embarrassed sometimes, I'll admit. I read some of the stuff I've posted and think, should I delete this? I'm embarrassed. Have I said too much? Have I communicated it correctly? That's usually what my issue is. Some of the comments come back and I think, oh no, I've not explained that well. But I just am not able to explain it in a different way. So again, oh, so high functioning. Yes, I am so lucky in so many ways of my life. For example, yes, I can be independent. I'm married. I have a job. I am so grateful for so much in my life. And I don't ever want to come across that I'm not appreciative of everything that I have and the relationships I have. But my word, sometimes I wish people could climb inside my mind and just see kind of what a complex, chaotic and dark place it can be. And especially when you are autistic and you do suffer from things like post-traumatic stress disorder or complex post-traumatic stress disorder and depression and anxiety. And so many of us do have these coexisting conditions, and it's a really hard thing to kind of navigate. And this is another thing that affects my togetherness. If I'm going through a phase or a spell of depression, then my word, I'm a different person yet again. And people just find it very confusing. And that's why sometimes people, I think I've been called a schizophrenic in the past. And, and people use it as a slur, which is really unkind, to be honest with you. I think too many people are quick to kind of call people names that they know nothing about. But, I've been called these names before because people can't work me out, because I will come across one way one time they meet me and I might be really bubbly and chatty, and the next time I can't get a sentence together. That's the reality of my life, and I think that is the problem. Maybe it's because I'm a bit inconsistent, but I can't help it. And the only way I can be consistent is to, again, have this mask, but that's damaging to the individual in the long run, isn't it? Because of all the things I've already mentioned. So, yeah, I think it's all about balance and this togetherness thing. I think we all do sometimes. We all have a lot to offer other people, but we aren't all going to have it together all the time, and that's okay. And I'm finally in a place in my life where I'm kind of making peace with that. But I can't say I'm 100% comfortable with it, because I'm a perfectionist, always have been. But I'm starting to allow myself to just relax a little bit about things and to not worry so much about people seeing that, no, I'm not perfect. And actually, I think that that is actually a better thing for people to see, because I think one of the worst things is you're struggling at home, you're struggling with your children or your life, and then somebody seems to have it all completely perfectly together, and you can't help but question what you're doing wrong. And the truth is, you're probably not doing anything wrong. Like, all of our children are different. We all have very similar overlapping experiences, but they're not all the same. So something that works for my children won't necessarily work for someone else's. I share the stuff so it's something that we can try, or somebody can then throw another suggestion at me or other people that are following the page. It really is, for me, genuinely about community. That is the whole purpose of my page. And I really do feel that's what we've built there. And I'm so proud of it. And I'm so proud of everybody that, you know, follows and comments and contributes. And one of the things that really makes me smile is when I see people meeting virtually, I suppose, through the page, and then having conversations with one another about their experiences. And I try and interact as much as possible, even if it's just a like or a care or a love reaction, because, you know, we're now at quite a large following compared to what I used to have on my page, and I can't keep on top of everything the way I used to, but I still try and interact on some level. And there are a lot I miss now because the notifications come in and I can't keep on track of them all. But I really love that there's a space where people can do this. And I really love seeing everybody interacting and supporting one another. Like, what a wonderful, wonderful community we are, because there is darkness in this community, in every community. But I don't see a lot of that on this page. And especially because I worry, like I said, I worry I come across really negative sometimes. I don't want to come across like this whingy person who's painting life as so awful. And, you know, but the thing is, the reality is, some days are horrendous. Today was one of those days, but I'm not going there. But some days are not. And it is a real mixed bag. But this life is not straightforward. It is challenging from a personal perspective and from a parenting perspective. And, you know, having to deal with all the outside entities, it's not easy. I don't want to sugarcoat it. I think it's wonderful for those people who say, oh, you know, I just celebrate my kids. It's all wonderful in our neurodivergent household. I'm really pleased for those people, genuinely. I'm not resentful at all, like, genuinely, for the joy that you have out of your everyday life. Like, brilliant, fantastic. But please don't apply your situation to everybody else, because we're not all the same. And it's not necessarily because you're a better parent, okay, or your children are better. We're in a different situation, clearly. And I think, you know, we've talked about this before. There's just judgment everywhere, and it doesn't help anybody, does it? You don't have to be unhelpful and put others down. Like, empathize with the struggle they're having. And by all means, if they would like some support or advice, then go ahead and offer some. But don't just assume that everything you do is better. And one of the things I have learned is about the listening. Something that has taken me a very long time to understand and really nail is that sometimes people just want to talk and be heard and be seen, and you don't always have to solve everyone's problems. In fact, I'm sure this is from a book that I read when I was a teenager. I think it's Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus or something, and about how men try and solve problems and women just want to be heard. It's kind of that, isn't it, really? So there was more I wanted to say, but I'm now conscious of how long I've been, like, rambling, quite frankly, on for. So I don't think I can go on an awful lot longer. But there are so many parallels, like I said, with our autistic experience and the togetherness thing, and the fact that so many factors come into play. And, you know, I do apologise if anybody ever thinks that my page is just being negative. It's not the intention, but there are times when I am, and sadly, I do come on there and I do share it, and I probably overshare. But hey, this actually reflects real life, because I do this in real life. I'm a nightmare for oversharing. The difference on this space online is that you guys get it. And that's wonderful, because so many of you go, oh my gosh, me too. I feel this. And I'm like, oh, yay. Because, yeah, I do have issues with, like, worrying what people think, because I've had a whole lifetime being questioned. And so people, again, will go, oh, you're attention-seeking. No, not at all. I'm not an attention-seeker, but sometimes the feelings get too much. And the whole point of this community, isn't it, is that we've got each other. I get so many private messages now, and do you know what? I've had so many people recently contact me and say what a difference my page has made or our interactions through the messages. And again, I can't tell you, like, how privileged I feel that you've come to me with something so important, with, like, the problems that you're facing, and you seem to believe that I have something I can offer you to help. And sometimes there's nothing I can do practically apart from just tell you that, you know, and reassure you that it's absolutely normal and understandable to feel the way you do, and that you're not alone, and this community is here for you, and I am here for you as much as possible, and I'll signpost where possible. But there are sometimes, some nights I'll go to bed and I feel really happy, humbled, privileged, and, you know, just so grateful to have met virtually so many people who do understand this experience. And I'm really pleased I set up this page, because I always said if I could just kind of reach a few people, I would be so happy. I just wanted to be able to get my voice out there and my experiences, and especially things like our experiences with the diagnostic process or local authorities and, you know, dealing with professionals. And I just wanted to show other families things that worked for us and hope that it helped others. And the fact that I know I have helped people, it really does. I just feel like all of this was for a purpose. It isn't nice that we've had to go through it, and it isn't nice that my children have had to go through what they have, especially my eldest. It does break my heart. But I said to my husband the other day, I do wonder sometimes if, not that it was, you know, it's not fate. I don't mean that. I don't think anyone should have to go through this nonsense. And some of it was avoidable because it was negligence. It was poor practice. But what I do hope is that some of our experiences and the things I have shared and the families I have helped will not have to go through the same level, or, you know, maybe the same duration of the crap that we went through, quite frankly. And, you know, although it doesn't change the fact we've been through it, it makes me feel so joyful to think that we might have been able to help other people through a really hard time, or maybe even be able to avoid some of the horrible things we went through. And for me, that means that it wasn't all done in vain, if that makes sense. So I am now doing my usual going off on a tangent. So I haven't covered half the stuff I wanted to cover, but I've been waffling on for some time. So I'm going to sign off now. And thank you so much for listening, and speak soon.